Welcome back to the Live from the Podium series. Across corporate Canada, organizations are moving beyond proving the case for diversity and inclusion to broad efforts to create change. This episode brings together a panel of thought leaders who are at the forefront of intersectionality in this country.
Good afternoon. I'm so delighted to be back up here on the stage moderating today, which I'm sure will be an enriching conversation on diversity and inclusion and intersectionality. Before I get started, I'd like to get a sense of who's in the room today, so please raise your hand. Who earns an income from the workforce? Who here is a millennial? Baby boomer? Who here has received a post-secondary or college education? Who here is from a foreign country or speaks English as a second language? Who here considers themselves to be a visible minority in Canada? In the workforce? Lastly, who here identifies as female? I'm sure there are many other questions that I could ask, and many more of those that you or someone beside you may not raise your hand for. What if I asked if you had a mental or physical disability? What if I asked if you were a member of the LGBT community? But more to the point, how many of you put your hands up only once? Twice? Three times? Many of us likely did, and that's why we're here today. Your diversity profile, like everyone else's, is a complex combination of factors that make you, that make you unique. Diversity isn't simple or obvious. People are multidimensional. We are intersectional. One definition of intersectionality is the existence of multiple and overlapping forms of oppression, which intersect in different configurations for each individual, creating unique experience and sets of social barriers. I wanted to try and simplify that for you, but I found it was a bit hard to do, and that's why we're here today. It's in no way a new concept, though. It does address invisibilities that, at least to this point, we're not talking enough about, and in turn, we're not addressing. Today, we are asking if we have the skills, the language, never mind the programs or the policies in our society, in our businesses, and in our legal system to understand and advance this concept. But why would we? There is little regulatory incentive to take a multidisciplinary approach, exemplified by how corporations continue to report on gender and race in the workplace. This is good, right? This is what we wanted. But in some ways, it further enhances our differences and certainly does nothing to address our commonalities or our intersectionality. This is leaving many behind, and the data tells the story. And I'm sure many of you know the story and could read the statistics off, but I'll give you a slight view. Fortune 500 CEOs in 2017, 72%, you're rolling your eyes, right? We know the story. 72% were male, 6.4% were female, 3% Hispanic, 2% Black. You can see the point. We are tracking and reporting a one-dimensional diversity. How many of you are tracking the experience of multidimensional people? How are we building organizations and policies or learning for people who fit in more than one box? And isn't that so many of us in the room today? So why would we want to do that? Beyond the numbers, the impacts of uniform leadership teams are showing up in the products and the experience that they deliver to consumers, to us. For example, a recent review of IBM and Microsoft's facial analysis services found the company's algorithms proved near perfect identifying the gender of men with light skin, but frequently erred when analyzing images of women with darker skin. While the implications of this instance may have been small, it brings to light the impact of one-dimensional view design can have. Imagine the impacts we consider when we consider how fast technology is advancing. This doesn't just impact how fast we can unlock our iPhones or the potential for us to board planes with just face recognition, but all of the future advancements that we are going to use facial recognition technology and more. This is putting pressure on society and business and government to keep up, and we must get it right. One example that I would be remiss if I didn't talk about today, in when we didn't have the language or the law to have the right debate when we needed it, was the case of Anita Hill, an American attorney, I'm sure many of you are familiar, who became well known when she accused U.S. Supreme Court nominee Clarence Thomas, her boss, of sexual harassment. Her intersectionality caused a divide in the support that she received for her accusations. Many couldn't agree if her situation was debated. Many couldn't agree if her issue was about race or gender. And as a result, this challenged the ability for people and the courts to address the vulnerabilities she faced as both Black and a woman. In our view, we are still far from understanding intersectionality, and it is not just unfortunate, it's a critical problem, because our workforce is becoming much more diverse. Our diverse talent, our diverse ideas, our diverse customer bases, our diverse markets in a rapidly evolving and competitive market. So how can we start capturing the complexity of the human experience and take an intersectional approach to the way we promote gender equality, or better still, inclusion of everyone? How can we engage employees across difference and multiple ways they define themselves to reap the real benefits? What we know now is that our brains are wired to make quick and primal assessments of our surroundings, and sometimes we can't help it. When we see someone, we unconsciously group what we see, and thus can often be guilty of labeling that person into an identity, and one which they might not even identify with. This afternoon, we want to change that and internalize how we connect with others on multiple levels. Let's support each other in raising the collective bar on this topic, shall we? So with that, I'd like to thank our panel of experts for joining us this afternoon for this very candid conversation. And I'm going to switch over here. Look at that seamless transition of microphones. Awesome. Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
All right. So I have a number of questions to ask each of you, but before we get started, I thought each of you could explain why you're so invested in this topic. I'll start with you.
So the question was, why am I invested in this work?
Yeah.
It's simple. It's because of my life journey. So I was born and raised in Kenya, East Africa. I am half Indian, East Asian, and half British. My father is a colonialist who came to Africa to build the railways with the British government. I have a brother who is half Black, and I grew up in a situation where I was never quite in the right box. I wasn't white enough, I wasn't brown enough, I didn't have black skin, I wasn't African enough. I came to Canada, and the story continues. And I really know what it's like to be on both sides of that line, to be both belonging, but also to not belong. And so this is very important to me because I want to make sure that we do everything we can to create space for all of us.
Thank you. Rachel?
The reason that I do this work is because as little as 8 years ago, transgender people in this country had no rights to anything. And in fact, trans people were being murdered in this country and still continue to be murdered around the world. Last year, there were 254 murders of trans people just in North and South America alone. And it was only last year that trans people were enshrined in the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Until that point, if we wanted to have rights in the workplace, rights to go forward and to be a part of our society, we had to litigate those rights. And so I'm really happy that we're coming a long way with what is a very marginalized community, especially if you're a trans woman of color. But we have a long way to go. And so this really drives me to start thinking about not only, you know, rights for LGBT people around the world, but what are some other communities that we have that are being marginalized by a system that sets them up to fail? And so a lot of the work I've been doing has been thinking about what you talked about earlier, technology, how our new technology systems are impacting inequality around this country, and doing more of that work. We have a saying that says, we're not free until everyone's free. And until everyone is free to be equal in this country, I'm gonna continue to do this work.
Well, I'm invested for a few reasons. Well, primarily, I'm an immigrant, and I think there's intersect there. I am Black, I am female, I'm from the Caribbean, I have an accent, and I'm sure many of you can, it resonates with many of you. And we do feel that sometimes we get discriminated against at times, so it's important that the education happens. I feel this is the opportunity where people can learn. It's a case where you don't know what you don't know, and if people don't understand, they make mistakes. And it's not because they really want to, because they just don't know. So my goal is to help educate people here today, if you're not already.